minimum viable product, MVP, is what goes to market, and interactivity with your clients drives the development into a third space of creativity and evolution between the idea and the end user. This thinking, pioneered by Eric Ries in his book The Lean Startup, was a shift from previous thinking, whereby companies completely developed a product prior to releasing the market. The practice came from the tech and digital sector, as it made sense to be able to release several versions of software, apps and the like, and use the collective wisdom of the customer to enhance the product, rather than making the assumption that the creators and developers had all the answers. The Lean Startup was more than a process innovation for launching a business on a shoestring. It started a new conversation about user or customer agency and the power of collaboration. Knowledge and its power became democratized, and, more interestingly, consumers became collaborators, and in doing so, had a much deeper connection with a brand when they had a say in the creation of products and services. They weren't being dictated to anymore. They were being asked their opinion and rewarded with products that were functional and affordable. Sure, this is trickier to pull off with a mass-produced item like a car. But more and more cars are about customization, and it may do excellent things for struggling traditional industries if they did more MVPs and fewer top-down sales. We will look at how to make an MVP and what type could suit your business later in the book. So for now, just understand this is going to market with an early working prototype. The link here is that everyone knows the MVP stage is just the beginning. It is absolutely, unequivocally impermanent. There are plenty of leaps of faith in this process. When the Lean method came out initially, it flipped the usual practice of having a complete product enter the market. The big shift was the realization that you can't always anticipate fully what the market actually needs unless you have a conversation with your end users first. You can see a problem that needs solving and come up with a creative solution, but you and your team, if you have one, are a very limited number of thinkers. By reaching out and releasing an MVP, you are surrendering to the market. You are surrendering to hundreds, thousands, or millions of people who can engage with your idea, give you feedback, and make it better. You don't know the outcome, and you don't need to, as in theory, the best outcome will be the one that emerges through the collaborative journey. By just looking at the parallels between this approach to a new product or service and the approach to our lives of working in the yogic way, you can see how the elements harmonize. This message will be sounded loud and clear in as many ways as possible. Surrender! You don't have to know everything. You don't have to do everything. You just have to be alert and listen to the strong voice, feeling or desire that niggles at you and tells you that there is a role for you to play in bringing an idea into the world. Get used to change and see it as a constant positive. Call it agility. Train yourself to operate this way by knowing yourself and your mind intimately. I think that often when we have this calling to contribute a new business idea, a concept for a good hustle, the default position is to reject it, to say no. If we aren't enough in our everyday life, how can we possibly rearrange the pieces of our lives to enable something as big as a new business to get out of our heads and into the world? It's a fair question, especially if you haven't got any experience in business or have very specific areas of expertise. Even more so if you have no idea how you would fund your idea or where the time to do all of this would come from. You can see how it's pretty easy to slam the door shut in the face of opportunity. Based on everything we think we know about our limitations, our can'ts and don'ts, and the overwhelming sea of anxiety that can accompany pursuing an idea, it is amazing that anyone ever actions their big ideas. But they do. And usually because the voice of urgency to get it done is louder than the voice of resistance. Being able to hear the voice of urgency is easier once the mind is quiet and the body still, which is one of the many gifts a meditation practice will bring. From side hustle to good hustle. The good hustle pre-training is where the heavy lifting gets done, as once the game has started, you have to rely on your newly minted neural pathways to react with a loose grip and a steady trust in the now. This can be of some comfort if you are straining like a greyhound at the gate to race your idea to market, but are held back by the regular impediments that life throws your way, especially when work, family, and children are involved. Delays are a convenient time to do more practice on the mat and the meditation cushion. It is also an opportunity to engage in further conversations with potential customers and collaborators. Building an awareness of your key skill sets allows you to get started pointing in the right direction. If we backtrack to the question, what is it that makes you feel love? This is usually where there is a confluence of skill, mastery, and motivation. You can make a list, and it may be at this point that you recognize your existing work bears very little relationship to that which makes you burst with love. Don't even try to link your list to your existing work if that becomes a blockage to getting familiar with your joy. For some readers, you may well feel that all of your work is repellent and represents a series of millstones rather than milestones in your life. No matter. There will be moments where you hook into that feeling of absorption and joy, where the world is going by and you are in the flow with it. It could be when you are making coffee for your co-workers or counselling the CFO on their unhappy marriage. It could be when you are arranging some flowers for the front desk or creating systems in messy digital files. Be forensic in your investigations and don't dismiss a current situation. When you pinpoint happiness arising, ask yourself what is happening in this moment when you find you are loving what you're doing. This is the point on the chart where you drop a pin, a definite clue to your own happy map. Keep investigating what gets your joy going. Give this exercise some time and oxygen. It isn't a tick and flick operation. Remember the virtue of patience and cultivate it here, along with self-kindness. If you're imagining everyone else gets the answer straight away, they don't, and your own experience is incomparable anyway. So take it slowly and lovingly. You may need to physically stop reading this book and get still. Settle into a comfortable pose or seated in a quiet place where you can have some time to just be alone and undisturbed. Close your eyes and try and conjure up images of activities and moments in your life where you have felt a deep sense of love and connection, where you have been truly happy or even just content, a much underrated state of being. Of course, you also don't know what is outside of your own experience either, which means that feeling is often a better guide than something you can put a label on. Just a note about confusing these feelings of love and happiness with attachment to sensory pleasure. If a recurring vision of your happy place is smashing down a bucket of ice cream, this may not be happiness, but numbing unhappiness and discomfort through sense indulgence. Logically, this is not an activity that you would do over a longer period of time to gain mastery over your mind, become an entrepreneur, and spread the devotion. Unless your name was Ben or Jerry. Keep looking for signs of happiness. Keep noting feelings of contentment. Become aware of their timing and correlations. These are signals for you to help you on the path. When you have these happy signals in sufficient quantity to feel they are a representative sample of your true self, the next step is to cast around for an opportunity that could be big enough to scale into a business for you. Look from every imaginable angle, and even then remain open to more. Our humanness has blinkers that leave us with very narrow vision. Remember, as BKS Iyengar says, what you are looking for is already quietly within, waiting for the mess and chaos of your mind to calm, the dust to settle, to be revealed. Don't get frustrated if you don't get immediate answers. Always keep in mind that you are taking on a practice. This is the long game, the longest. It's the game of your life. Aside from these signs, there are some other indicators that you have found your good hustle dharma mojo and are on the way to living in flow and turning self-love into selfless service. Once your idea has settled and taken shape, you can apply the following four questions, which I call the good hustle hurdles to it, and tune in to your inner compass for guidance. Number one, will you enjoy doing it? Number two, does it come easily? Number three, does it give benefit to others? Number four, can you see yourself doing it for a long time? The good hustle hurdles. If I was to apply these questions to my next venture of teaching Good Hustle workshops around the globe, here's what it might look like. Number one, will you enjoy it? If you think about what you're intending to do, can you project that joy and happiness onto every conceivable part of it, keeping the blinker limitations and shit sandwich parts in mind? When running workshops, there are a lot of logistics, a lot of marketing and promotion, and work to remove any barriers to participation for potential clients. There's also a fair amount of administrivia and detail, some of which is definitely a feeling in my shit sandwich. Most of this is easily manageable with good assistance and taking advantage of great virtual assistants, VAs, and project management software. Happily, this is a minor part of the real joy, working with inspiring people and watching them transform into good hustlers full of joy and meaning and making a difference. I can tick that one off. Number two, does it come easily? To be working in your own flow, though you can always continue to develop, the basic skills required and delivery of the idea have to come easily. This means if you want to be an engineer, you will have to have a love for maths and physics and have completed a degree in engineering before you can begin. If you want to run a doggy daycare, you will need to love animals, have an affinity for communicating with them, a willingness to clean up a lot of poop, and a large, secure venue to house them. Coming easily has to be a function of your willingness and joy in the activity. Not that it will necessarily be easy, but that for you, there is a drive that is bigger and stronger than you are. For me, communicating is one of my favourite activities, assisted strongly by a love of people. I enjoy public speaking and group facilitation, and have trust in the right people being in the room with the right information flowing through me. I have largely nailed surrender in the classroom and love to observe each time I open my mouth and let the words flow out. Buddhist nun Pema Chodron recounts an anecdote about her teacher giving her instructions on how to teach. He said, "Prepare well, know your subject, then leave your notes at the door." It's brilliant advice on how to best teach from the heart, acutely engaged with what your students want to learn rather than what you want to teach them. So I prepare, then I surrender, and go with whatever questions and directions the students throw my way. Number three, does it give benefit to others? In the teachings of Buddhism, all of us have within us Buddha nature, and the capacity for enlightenment extends to all sentient beings. This is where mindful action and compassion are such fundaments to the teachings of living and working in your Dharma. You have to have an acute awareness of your duty of care to all. In asking whether what you do fulfills that duty, there are many different ways to cut this question. So let's dig into the idea of service. Selfless service is giving freely to others. This is the absolute bedrock that differentiates a good hustle from any old venture that has profit and personal reward as its main goal. How are you going to serve humanity? How is your idea going to serve humanity? How are you going to embed these values into your business so they stay front and center throughout its scale and growth? This is the heart of this book. Building understanding of the personal journey, preparing your mind, then preparing your capacity to execute your good hustle. Not just getting a business started, but keeping it values-based and sustainable for the term of its operation. This is an easy one for me to apply to my venture of delivering the good hustle to the world. Within all of my products and ideas is a fail-safe route to philanthropy. I know that my skills in Dharma are based on communicating and facilitating ideas that create social value. This fundamentally informs all the work I do and can conveniently be linked to earning money and raising revenue. But my end game isn't more money and the acquisition of more stuff. Earnings translate to the funding of worthwhile projects that promote more good hustles being started. The other precious commodity is time to put towards the priceless jewel of stillness and space to pursue my spiritual practice. In my business model, once my basic costs are met, and I keep in check that they don't balloon from costs to needs to wants in a subtle first world problem escalation, all surplus funding is routed into funding social enterprises and philanthropic projects. This model gives me a huge incentive to work harder, to serve more, to do more, driven by the knowledge of the service I can bring to other sentient beings. And as you will discover, or may have already discovered, your capacity to sell, sell, sell is boosted enormously when you completely and wholeheartedly believe in what you are doing for someone else. Knowing that every dollar is going to change a life, amplify an opportunity, or inject love and compassion into a situation is an epic motivator. Number 4. Can you see yourself doing it for a long time? Don't be confused by this in an era of job hopping and short attention spans. Gather your answers from the previous 3 questions and extract the overall theme and feeling. In my case, it is sharing knowledge and hopefully wisdom, whether it is with The Good Hustle or teaching yoga or supporting global startups, whatever the content, it is the act of a loving transmission of information that positively enables another. I can definitely say that if I was going to teach the same thing forever, I would be nowhere near as sanguine about this as my path. But I can happily meander around from experience to experience, transmitting the love like a satellite, while my teaching channels remain diverse and interesting. As a hangover from my early days of being a chef, where there were a lot of hangovers, I often yearn to have a little food venture somewhere, to be able to dish up some tasty vegan love on a plate, to give nourishment to the world and subsidize those who can't feed themselves and their families adequately. I love cooking, feeding and serving. It comes easily, it serves humanity, all clear ticks. But I know without a shadow of a doubt that I can't do it every day. The rose-colored food venture fantasy fades as quickly as it comes over me, as my family and friends gently remind me of what happens when I stay in the one place day after day standing in a stove. It's off the menu for me, but happily there are lots of heart-centered entrepreneurs doing good hustles and social enterprises to meet this growing segment of the market. I can teach them how to run a great business and cheer them on from the lip-smacking sidelines without having to tie on an apron. Turn your hurdles into hustles. Take some time now to think about your big, beautiful ideas using the good hustle hurdles. Just by undertaking this exercise, you will automatically exclude some concepts straight off the bat. At first, this may be a little hard. There could well be some strong attachment to those concepts and the vision of yourself in that role. But your gut will ring a bell when there are irreconcilable differences between your idea and your capacity to deliver on all of the above. The process of having a good business idea is an iterative one. Paraphrasing Richard Branson, ideas are like buses. There is always another one coming along. We can put this in a mindfulness context and say ideas are like thoughts during meditation. There is always another one to acknowledge and dismiss. The message here is don't overthink it. If you really have to strain to fit your concept into these 4 noble truths of your business idea, it's not your one, and undoubtedly will be perfect for someone else. So dismiss it with love and compassion and continue to retain the parts of it that lit you up, as this process is heavily weighted to feeling as it is to thinking and doing. Think of it like falling in unconditional love, as you have to be really, really attached to your idea to get it through the gestation period, birth it out into the market, and watch it grow and take shape on its own. How do you know when you're in love? It's highly irrational, but absolutely a feeling you know when it hits you. And I don't mean the hot, lusty brain snap we've all had at one time or another that has clouded our capacity to make a good decision that can go the distance. I mean the love that you can imagine waking up with in decades to come that is built on rock-solid foundations of honesty, respect, and friendship. One that can last the distance no matter what turbulence might hit. When that idea comes along, it's likely to bug you enough that you start taking serious notice. It will buzz in your ear, tap on your shoulder, be peering in the window of your soul in a feather boa, jousting with your logical routine and orderly life until you are ready to give it the time of day. And when that happens, you will need to be fully prepared to not only manage your mind, but to deploy it in the right mode to take you through each of the stages to get you and your idea to market. Doing your business. Finding your natural state, your Dharma, and from there creating a life and creativity outlet through business that reflects who you are is the central mission of The Good Hustle. It's a handbook to get you to a place in your mind and body where a business can emerge, a business to enable the expression of the Dharma path that has lain quietly inside you, waiting for you to wake up. But much like yoga asana, you can't start with a headstand and work your way back to mountain pose. Firing up your business idea is only going to take you to the next place on your transition from caterpillar to butterfly if you are ready to fight the imaginal cells that have served you for so long and let the part of you that has been the caterpillar die gracefully. So wherever it is you find yourself right now, you got this. If getting up on cold mornings to meditate and do yoga, or giving up your love of cocktails to work on your business plan, or finally saying goodbye to that person or job in your life that does not serve you makes you feel sick to the stomach and emphatically say, no, I won't, then no means no. Don't judge yourself or others who make different choices. You are where you are meant to be. You'll find no spiritual bullying here. Everything begins on the tip of I will, not I bloody won't, and you can't make me. But let's assume that you're at least good hustle curious. Whether or not you have been swept up in a striving frenzy of can-do or are choosing to sit this one out, it's time to have a look at some of the business tips, tricks and hacks to consider when getting your good hustle in shape. I'll cover some of the ways to merge your practice of spirituality with your business behavior. Keeping mindfulness and motivation top of mind is essential as you go along, as this is how you're going to maintain your intention of action with meaning. And in the chapters that follow, we will discuss how to do this. By interrogating each part of your business process with the question, will this serve all sentient beings? You will find you are given crystal clear boundaries and go no-go points. Keeping that in mind, the development of your good hustle begins with a process of ideation. This will be covered in detail in the section on the eight limbs of yoga. Get your idea in clear view and get set on it. You may be struck with a creative thunderbolt through the previous processes I've outlined that guides you directly to your Dharma at a moment when you're ready to act. Or you may instigate the process by starting to look for clues that lead you to your Dharma, unearthing them and you on your journey of self-discovery until you end up in the same place. Whichever way, there is no better choice or better path. Only your choice and your path. Only what's happening in your mind, your Dharma, your attachment and your reaction. Either way, once you are there and you have a good enough idea of what you are going to deliver through your good hustle, you will need a rough go-to-market plan. Part 3. The Good Hustle Playbook. You have to have the vision first, the thought. Then you do it. It's so easy to stay stuck in our own little ways. We're so scared to do something new. We're scared to think differently. We're scared of what the world thinks. Be brave. Do things well. Think differently. Venerable Robina Courtin, Buddhist nun, founder of the Liberation Prison Project. In the West, we usually reach for new knowledge, burying ourselves deeper in information, without realizing that we are already full of thoughts and words and opinions, but light on wisdom. The Good Hustle Toolbox. The whos, whys, whats and hows have been defined and revealed. You've spent some time on a first date with your mind and haven't snuck out a bathroom window to get away. You've stuck up some posters on telegraph poles to help find your missing Buddha nature and a great business idea. You're loaded on growth mindset, and with effort and resilience, nothing is out of your reach. It's time to get practical. Yes, more practical than you've ever imagined. And to do that, it's time to integrate our new practices with a framework to deliver you a working model of your next big thing. Lean in to a lean start. The lean startup process is a continuous cycle based on three repeating phases: build, measure, and learn. Good business planning is a continuous cycle based on three similar repeating phases: plan, review, and revise. The two work together collaboratively to produce a blueprint for managing the nimble business of now, both digital and bricks and mortar. This is for many the single hardest part of the startup process. If you haven't had much to do with the world of business and are feeling clueless about where to begin, This can be where you yield to the temptation to abandon ship and make a whole ton of excuses why letting the moment go through to the keeper is a better idea than tackling a business plan. Of course it's not. And remember, wisdom is learning through doing. No one was born with a silver business plan in their mouth, and at some point everyone has to work one out. We're not inventing anything new, and the good news is that it is much easier than you might think. We've already talked about the value of the lean business model, and of course there is also a lean business plan to go with it. The one I use to most demonstrate the simplicity of what you really need to know is Chris Gilbo's $100 Startup Business Plan One Pager. Extracted from Chris's excellent book, The $100 Startup, which is a Dharma manifesto if ever there was one, the business plan proves that less is more. You can grab a copy of it gratis at 100startup.com. And it basically asks you in one page, no more, to answer the following questions in one or two sentences. What will you sell? Who will buy it? How will your business idea help people? What will you charge? How will you get paid? How will customers learn about your business? How can you encourage referrals? Once these foundations are established, some measurements of benchmark success are posed, including whether the success metrics will measure the number of customers or focus on the annual net income or something else. Then it asks you to do a little troubleshooting and risk management. Time to get those deep-seated fears out onto the page and look for an answer, if one exists, which at this time in the planning cycle it may not. Next, you need to note down any worries or questions and how you plan to solve or answer them. Choose your three most burning ideas and address them. Just the act of doing this will make you feel better about the things you don't know. And with your new training of surrender and faith in the timing and the Dharma, you can leave the answers to be revealed in their own sweet time. Know that risk is there and will always be there. Some risk will be able to be controlled, some not. Rather than trying to eliminate it, accept that there is never 100% certainty in anything except death. Make sure you are comfortable with all of the potential outcomes of the risks you can think of. The other thing you can be pretty sure about is that whatever situations arise, they will be impermanent and somehow you will manage them. Everyone's appetite for risk will be different. The belief in the risk likelihood will be different. Once you have had a shot at what you think the big issues are likely to be, you can bring in your close circle of collaborators and pressure test your thinking with a wider group. The next question in Chris's one-page business plan is a good one. How else will you make money from this project? I like the way he phrases this with how else, as he is shining a light on the opportunities that flow from action. So growth mindset. What could develop in the future? What scope is there for other products or services to emerge from this original concept? This leads to broader thinking, such as whether you could charge to train other people in your method. Are there franchise or wholesale opportunities? Is there an innovative method or packaging you've created that has commercial value or intellectual property, IP, in its own right? This is the nudge to continue the creative process you began when refining your idea at the start. But remember, crawling, walking, and running, in that order, with some stop-offs for meditation, yoga, and meaningful conversations with future customers, of course. Your mission and vision, should you choose to accept it. Why I like Gilbo's method and use it all the time to help my clients get their structure down, there are two other things in our Good Hustle framework that are essential at the beginning of our business plan. These are the vision and mission statements. You want to have these in your planning documents as they clearly articulate the motivation for the business. They may be seen by some as fluffy additions to your documents. However, in the case of a good hustle, the reason why we are doing what we are doing is the motivation. It is the central nervous system of the business case. There are differences between vision and mission and how you write them up. The mission is why you exist. It is one succinct, dynamic statement, about a sentence long, detailing why you exist. The best mission statements are clear, compelling, and concise. Longer than 15 words, and you are getting into essay territory. Nailing the mission statement is tricky, in the sense that any perfect one-liner takes time to get right. Each word has to be powerful and economical. So give yourself time and space to be 100% happy with what you create. Sit with it. Meditate on it. Pick it apart and put it back together. The good news is that once done, this also serves as your elevator pitch and networking intro. You'll soon know it like the back of your hand and be able to reel it off with conviction. Best practice is always that the message of what, for who and why is absolutely unambiguous. The reason this is such a good double down for your elevator pitch is that when you get the opportunity to spread the word of what you're doing, especially with someone who may have the capacity to help you grow, you need to get their attention and keep it. If it looks like you're wobbling and are unsure of the business case yourself, then you won't inspire confidence in your capacity to deliver. Vision can be simply defined as what your company aspires to be, which can be quite different from what your company is as represented by your mission statement. When done right, your vision statement should help drive decisions and goals in your company. By doing the work crafting words that represent and reflect the Dharma of the good hustle you're creating, you are weaving a brand narrative for you and your customers, and really beginning to make the idea move from being inside your head to something tangible. It's not essential, but while you're on a roll with your underpinning statements, this could be a good time to pen some core values. They are your principles, beliefs, or philosophy. Make yourself a list of about 5 things and bind them to your mission and vision. Evolving your business plan. Using lean startup principles doesn't mean skipping the business planning or jumping in without directional guidance. It means starting small with a business plan that summarizes the current strategy, metrics, milestones, tasks, and basic responsibilities. It's not the doorstop size output of an MBA or a printed and bound document you show to your bank manager, then never use again. A real business plan should be agile and grow organically, just like a lean startup. The process starts with a concrete and specific plan for what's supposed to happen and continues forever. It needs regular review and revision as the market, customers, and in the case of Good Hustle, your increasing clarity on the direction of your Dharma inform it. One of the great benefits of using the lean startup model as an entrepreneur is that as you are working on your mind management practice, it roots out the paralysis of perfectionism. If you are stuck in being the doer, never being enough, and worrying continually about reputational damage or being criticized, the likelihood of you taking the leap to actually opening your doors, digital or tangible, is limited. Having an agile business plan and limitless opportunity to be able to improve and change salves the idea that things can always be better while allowing the action of being a good hustle to begin. I've talked up the $100 startup one-page business plan, but don't take my word for it. Maybe you want something that is more detailed. Give Google a whirl and find the best template for you to step out the beginnings of your good hustle. Avoid anything that wants 5-year projections, as this doesn't suit the lean framework or reality. Just plan the time it takes to get to the market launch and about 6 months out from that maximum. Don't forget your budgets and detailed cost breakdowns. These are important to ascertain whether what you want to do is financially doable and, more critically, sustainable. Then keep that rolling as you grow and develop. Share this complete document with your trusted group of fans. Ask for feedback, collaborate and be open, embracing the guidance. With your idea firmly in your back pocket and a business plan mapped out, now you need to think about what your MVP will involve. Minimum viable products. A minimum viable product or MVP for your good hustle is the product or service with just those features and not more that allow you to ship or sell through bricks and mortar or digitally deliver a product that your first customers or early adopters can see and use, will pay money for, and, most importantly, give you feedback on. Again, no need to put your panic pants on. If you are going into a spin thinking you aren't even finished reading this book and now you've got to create an MVP, this is just a heads up that you don't have to wait and sequentially develop everything. As you're planning and meditating and preparing yourself for your Dharma-driven launch, be thinking about getting out there and into the market and envision what this tangibly looks like. When I was writing my book, Dogs of India, I wanted to seed the idea of the book into the minds of people so that when it was done, they were already excited and wanted more. I built a website and started talking about the story, the characters, the writer's journey, and the book's philanthropic mission of funding vet care for stray Indian dogs. When I had some writing that I was happy with, I released sample chapters. This was effectively an MVP. It was just those features that allow potential clients to get interested, leading to the ultimate goal of a book purchase down the track. You can see your MVP as the next level in your commitment to living your Dharma, where, as they say, shit gets real. Trust in your gift and your belief and the work you are doing. Let the MVP be a gulp of clean, oxygen-rich air after being down the mines your whole life. Putting together a website or, even leaner, a landing page is one way of getting an MVP out there. You have plenty of choice in whether you make your own using a template cloud-based service, get a freelancer to design one, or use a full-service agency. These are all decisions you can make based on budget, need, and the functionality requirements of your business. Just know that you will need something, and it will be the link for all of your social media channels and the place where all your online transactions can happen quickly and easily for your customers. You could choose to do as I did and have a website that was at first just a homepage with info about me and the book and a blog. The blog will give you a hook to get people coming back and becoming familiar with you, your brand, and your values, where you can start building the conversation. If your business idea is in the tangible realm, say you are wanting to run yoga classes, these too can have MVPs and of course need a digital presence to get your people following along. Find a studio that will give you a slot on their timetable, or a suitable empty space or sunny park to launch your yoga class to the world. Describe it and your unique selling point, USP, via your digital channels, then promote, execute, and gather feedback from participants. There you have an MVP for a yoga class. For food businesses, say you want to have your own vegan street food truck or cafe. You don't have to wait until you can purchase your food truck or get a lease. Find a commercial kitchen that can rent you some time. Look for schools or clubs with certified kitchens. Many of them will happily let you use theirs for reasonable prices. Create your products and take them to people via markets, pop-ups, takeovers of other people's cafes, or even host your own party at home, where people come to sample your treats and give feedback. An MVP doesn't have to be complex. It is just a method of taking early samples of what you do to who you do it for. Be it till you are it. Fake it till you make it is an expression I detest. It's problematic to me because of the word fake. When starting a new business, you are learning new information, mastering new skills with the discipline of practice. Totally growth mindset territory. This is about as real an experience as you can get with no faking involved. No doubt you are already feeling like you are about to be called out at any minute by real professionals on your ignorance and lack, which drives fear and shame. Faking it till you make it is fundamentally all about what other people think of you. It is trying to keep a front of reputation for a faceless crowd so you can backfill it and eventually be that big gal on campus. Using an MVP allows you to take people on the journey with you from day one and let them experience it in its full reality of challenge and triumph. Falling flat on your face is an act of leadership, as it encourages all of the people who are too trapped to do what you're doing to believe in themselves and their capacity. As you are an agile, nimble business, your end product will probably be some distance from these early iterations anyway. And it is great to be able to reflect on where you started and reward those early adopters that have been on the journey from the start. All of which will provide you with a history of your efforts and the tale of your Dharma in development. MVPs are in this way an excellent reminder of impermanence. Good hustlers don't fake it till they make it. I like to have a different spin on it. Be it till you are it. That way you are always it, just in a perpetual process of becoming. your digital strategy. MVP sorted. Sitting alongside it is your lean but live business plan. The final element of this triple gem of good hustle planning tools is your digital strategy, which will enable the engagement of your idea MVP with the market. You've already got the what and why in your business plan and MVP. Now it's time for the how. Managing your digital strategy when you are developing your good hustle starts with having a strategy. Like the name says, a digital strategy is a document where you consider all of the elements of your digital and online suite of marketing tools and how you are going to apply them to building your business. When building a digital marketing strategy, it's important to think upfront about what you are trying to achieve. Is it designed to increase brand awareness? Is it to drive sales? Is it to educate your market to remove barriers to the previous two? Or is it perhaps all three? To do this, you need to truly understand what your customer wants, what makes your offering unique, and the most direct way to connect with your customers. Writing a digital strategy for your business is not as intimidating as it sounds. It's just a document outlining how your business should handle the different aspects of digital, from the website and mobile to email, social media, and digital marketing. Like the epic 5-year business plan, creating a digital strategy that looks 3 to 5 years ahead is unrealistic. Technology just moves too fast. Equally, accurate budgeting is difficult when the landscape is evolving at such a rapid rate. A digital strategy, like your lean business plan, takes a different approach. It doesn't need to cover everything in great depth, but instead should cover a time span of 6 to 12 months of implementable actions linked to a calendar of events, with clear measurements and points of decision. A digital strategy needs to focus more on creating a detailed roadmap to enable the right decisions on your marketing campaign spend, rather than defining everything up front. The exact scope of your digital strategy will vary depending on your business and what you do. You do need to write the strategy with a budget in mind. With a clear budget established, you will know what the priorities are and which recommendations will need to be implemented incrementally. As the digital environment is constantly evolving, this is a sensible, agile approach to how you develop, implement, measure, and evolve your tools to suit your business and customer needs. This acknowledges that, like your product and service development, your digital assets are never finished, and digital expenditure is ongoing rather than a one-off spend. The digital strategy for your business is part of your business strategy, and in many cases, when the business is wholly online, the digital strategy is your business strategy. Assuming you have read the previous section and have a lean business plan that isn't a dusty doorstop, the digital strategy can sit within the marketing, sales, and communications section, much like the Bhagavad Gita is a smaller but critical part of the Mahabharata and can stand alone or be read as part of the whole. Your digital strategy relies heavily on a very clear understanding of your customers, competitors, and the value proposition of your good hustle. The information that is created by knowing these three elements guides your strategy to target the digital channels where your customers, clients are likely to hang out. Are they badass galpreneurs on Facebook and Instagram? Professionals on LinkedIn? Fast-moving tech junkies on Twitter? Global opinion leaders on WeChat? Hipsters on Snapchat? Or maybe designers and bloggers on Pinterest? Do they want video, mobile, shareable gifts and memes, chock-a-block shops with seamless pay gateways, deep-diving blogs or pretty infographics? Or perhaps a combination of all these things? To know how to talk to your people, you have to know them and really get what motivates their lives. Let the sense of your ideal customer percolate in your mind. This is how you will know and refine the needs of your customers and be able to focus on delivering communications and interactions that best suit their way of engaging. The value proposition. In regards to the business side of the good hustle, we need to talk about money, or more specifically, the value proposition. How much do I charge is a big question for new entrepreneurs, but the real question they're asking is, what am I worth? Developing a price strategy is an important part of working out how and if you can make money from your brilliant idea. This is kind of critical. the best ideas are only good insofar as they are able to cost recover sufficiently to keep staff employed, doors open, the power on, and make you a living wage. That you may end up not being able to make enough money to greenlight your idea doesn't mean it isn't good, or that there isn't a needy user base crying out for it. All too often, it is a great idea that will meet a gap, but the business model isn't apparent, and there is no capacity to make money by doing it. Timing can play into this, as whatever factor is making it unviable could change, opening up an opportunity. If you've been working through your idea while you've been reading and are getting a sinking feeling that there are a few insurmountable risks, this may well be a good time for some assessment of viability. To understand the value proposition more deeply, let's start with a basic product-based business. You have to take into account the cost of base inputs, including your time, as well as packaging, manufacturing, and transport. Don't forget postage if you aren't selling direct. Costs of things like market stalls and their collateral have to be included here too, and your time standing on that stall, as the 8 hours plus travel time, isn't free. If you are entering a world where you need a workshop or a manufacturing center or retail space, you obviously have to factor everything at this scale. When you can work out the unit cost, then you need to work out what the market will pay. Look around for similar examples at the high and low end of the market and get a feel for where yours fits. You've established what it costs to produce and what the market will pay for it. The difference is your profit. Now multiply that by the volume you expect to sell weekly, monthly, annually. Is it enough to keep you living happily? It is a simple equation, and the important part is that you be really strict about all the input costs and look honestly at the viability. Once your base is established, you can work out if there are things like upsells, premium deals, or discounts for multiples that will create different pricing tiers. Don't be afraid to ask people who are already in your sector about their business models and costs. Many entrepreneurs will be more than happy to give you a hand and help you avoid rookie pitfalls. If you are selling a service, then you need to work out how you are going to charge. By the hour, by the job, on a retainer, on a subscription, or using a tiered approach. Again, what should direct this thinking is the research you do to first see what your customers want. How do they prefer to pay? Ask people what they think the service you are proposing is worth. Would they like less or more? And if so, of what? There is no better source than the very people who are going to be your purchasers. So ask and then listen to what they say. This is a critical part of the MVP process too. Do your research on what is being offered in your industry, what the common price points are, and where you might fit. I always caution against low pricing because of a perceived newness to the industry. That is your insecurity rather than what the market thinks you are worth. It is always harder to raise prices once you have begun, so do your homework and land on a price that gives you enough, makes your customers feel as though they are getting great value, and most importantly, covers your costs sustainably into the future. The bottom line is to give more value than the customer perceives they are paying for. This fits perfectly in a good hustle model, as you are made to give service and value willingly and with love. If your baseline is covered, then simply work out what will be the cherry on the top of the love sundae with regard to how much profit you need to comfortably survive and give back. As flagged, some of you may be in situations where your idea looks as though it's going to be unfeasible. If you are convinced that the idea needs pursuing, really start to interrogate sources of revenue, input costs, and who will pay for the product from as many angles as possible. This type of dilemma is especially apparent for good hustles that are serving a needy user group where the customer is not paying for the service. The temptation is often to start up by getting a grant with the assumption that other funding will be forthcoming. While this approach is within the spirit of good hustling, to surrender and have faith, the better path of valor is to establish a business that has a clear pathway to sustainable revenue, so vulnerable users are not left high and dry when the funding runs out. I'm talking here about organizations with overheads and fixed costs that can't be run in a nimble and agile way. If the original business model isn't working when you do the sums, how can you find another way to deliver the outcomes? Can you simplify the business? Can you offer a narrower service and reduce the fixed costs? Don't rush in. Allow yourself to think through all the options as far outside the box as you can go. Allow the spaciousness to find a solution. It could be that you desperately want to help women who are victims of domestic violence. A shelter is your dream, but the costs of getting a space and staffing, insurance and the like are well beyond your capacity. You believe it's your dharma and your calling, so what are your options? The first steps may simply be to volunteer your services at a shelter and see if you can satisfy your need to help this way. Plus, it will help you hone your ideas about what's needed from the front line. Maybe look at what women undergoing homelessness and or domestic abuse need in a practical sense and provide things like food, clothes, laundry services, hairdressing, childcare, movie tickets or personal products. What services could you offer? Shelter is obviously a big part of what women in this situation require, but there are many other ways of offering valuable support that require far less upfront investment. This is just one example of how to work around the problem of not having a long-term sustainable solution to your good hustle. There is always another way. The question comes back to the core of what you are trying to achieve. Follow your curiosity and trust in the answer showing up. The question is, how can I best serve? I strongly caution against starting up your idea and waiting for a funding miracle. From my own painful experience on a number of boards that have faced this exact dilemma, I know this doesn't always end well. Good hustles are not immune to failure because they are heart-centered. These types of ventures are probably more vulnerable because the drive is not purely fiscal, and sometimes the more traditional business planning underpinnings are ignored at the outset. These are things that are virtually impossible to reverse engineer. Knowing and recognizing your value and making sure that your needs are met is a baseline in sustainability. You may find that you can survive on much less income than you are used to. It's common to hear people talk about how much smaller their lives could become, how much simpler and happier, once they let go of all of the grasping and attachments. In the $100 startup, Chris Gilbo suggests that in your first year of trading, you should make the equivalent of the minimum wage in your country your baseline. While a good hustle comes from a place of creating value for others through unconditional love and service, it is mandatory that you are able to earn enough revenue to make it a viable business. You know what you need as your starting point to be able to launch. I encourage you to get as creative as possible in finding ways to begin as frugally as possible. The aim is to transition into a place where you are living in your dharma while delivering service to humanity in whatever small or large way you conceive that gift. It is always easier to innovate, scale and grow once you're rolling. This is why the MVP is such a great approach to get you in the game. Starving in the process is not a viable option. Your value is always the combination of your needs being met by the surplus from the costs of what you are selling and the price the market is willing to pay. When possible, keep your fixed costs low at the outset and prove your idea in the nimblest and most agile way before you commit to anything that's going to drive your costs up. Keep taking action. Keep talking to your customers. Keep looking for ways to do what you do better, to deliver more value and bring in more revenue so you have more to share around. The key ideas here are sustainability for you and your customers and being of service, however you are able to best deliver that with what you've got. Delivering happiness. Zappos CEO Tony Hsieh literally and metaphorically wrote the book on customer service. It's called Delivering Happiness, and it chronicles his experience as a successful entrepreneur of dot-com booms 1 and 2, making billions of dollars along the way. Tony Hsieh had the revelation after his first multi-million dollar exit from Link Exchange, an online advertising business he co-founded, that money didn't buy him anything but more stuff. His pursuit became creating the ultimate work environment that gave people the freedom to be themselves, and in doing so, the freedom to turn their attention 100% to customer service. Hsieh knows that when people are serving others, they're happy, and the byproduct is incredibly high rates of return customers and evangelistic word of mouth. When retailers complain about online taking their sales, I always argue that no one ever chooses to wait for a product on price alone when they can have instant gratification through fantastic customer service and perhaps pay a little more. They will, however, forgo the gratification if they perceive that the service is poor and the cost is higher. Zappos' model of online delivery doesn't promise that they are the cheapest. They just promise exceptional customer service. The product is secondary in importance to the experience of truly being served as far as that corporate culture is concerned. Good hustles are defined by a number of elements, but the principal one is that the hustle is undertaken in service to others. The companion to customer service is a commitment to ensuring that service is embedded in every part of the business and is the backbone of the culture you are creating. You can't successfully run a good hustle unless everyone who is part of that business is in it for the same reasons. Earlier in this chapter, we looked at mission and value statements. These documents have to be the answer to every question your business poses in the setup and operational stage. Will this decision, hire, or investment deliver the mission and values of this business? In the next section of this book, we are going to turn to Patanjali's Yoga Sutras and set out how the ancient sages systematically approached the path to enlightenment, using the eight limbs as a way of framing their actions against a values compass. Your actions as an individual will determine the culture of your company far more strongly than any set of values you stick up on the wall. In Delivering Happiness, Tony Hsieh says, just figure out what your personal values are, then just make those the corporate values. The key here is that you have to figure them out. You may think you know what your values are, but until you test them in the kinds of fast-moving situations you will face when getting your good hustle running, you won't really know for sure. Work out who your customer is, who you are serving, and then build your business model around how to best deliver happiness to them. Walk in their shoes as best you can. Understand the minutiae of fears and hopes and how what you do in your good hustle can make some elements of their lives easier and better. Remember, you don't have to change the world. You just have to make it better for someone else for a moment. Then repeat that action endlessly. Managing your mind. You've got the tools and the template to sort your ideas. Keep working on them, giving them time and space to incubate. While they are bubbling away, let's continue to understand tools for the management of the mind, which, as outlined, is such a critical canon in the management of business. Yet, despite having written curricula and taught in undergraduate and MBA university courses, I've never seen it even casually mentioned in relation to business mastery. For aspiring entrepreneurs, the mind is the beginning and the end of the story. When the mind is a collaborative partner on the business journey, the path to achieving anything is infinitely easier. To wrestle the mind into the right shape for contentment, we are going to take a look at some of the ancient wisdoms and apply them to our contemporary situations. One of those concerns an epic battle, both of place and of the mind, the Battle of Kurukshetra. This battle is the backdrop for the epic Sanskrit tale, the Mahabharata, that, as mentioned, the classic book of yoga, the Bhagavad Gita, is lifted from. The Gita is essentially a series of slokas or verses that document a conversation between Prince Arjuna and Lord Krishna, Arjuna's charioteer, friend and wise counsel, and conveniently for Arjuna, a god in human form. Where once executives read the art of war to learn leadership, the times and behaviours are a-changing. The Gita is a text relevant for today as a frank discussion about how to push through doubt and uncertainty and fulfil Dharma. Similarly, the Yoga Sutras, despite both the texts being authored centuries ago, speak to the transcendent nature of our problems and anxieties with clear remedies for how to fix what ails us. I said at the outset of this book that if we really wanted to shift from our lives of attachment and suffering, the recipe was already available, with a number of variations leading to the same path. These two texts, both essential in the Vedic canon, and in the lives of billions of Indians and Westerners, take different approaches to the same destination. Buddha, or Siddhartha Gautama as he was back then, was revealing his enlightened teachings some 700 years before Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, the individual teachings of which are said to have numbered in excess of 84,000. He too saw people engaged in struggle, experiencing suffering and stress, and looked for a way to relieve them. The Gita, the Yoga Sutras, and Buddha's teachings all have a single central nervous system. When the mind is managed through various practices,